Then I'll have some soup. Thank you. Thane lowered himself to the floor, folding his long legs beneath the low table with some difficulty. Papa took it upon himself to get Thane's meal, both as part of the ritual welcome of their one ally, and because he must have felt Sienna and Thane wanted to talk. They should talk. Sienna knew that much. But she had no idea where to start. Best to begin with what mattered most. "Thank you," she said, "for standing with our family." Thane nodded toward the trough outside. "I didn't see any other flags. The kindred have abandoned us." A bitter smile twisted her lips. "No one else came. Only you." He hesitated before saying, "I know your mother is innocent. Nobody from the valleys would ever do something like that. Least of all anyone connected to you." Their eyes met for a long moment before they both turned away. When her father set the bowl of soup in front of Thane, she saw how slowly Papa moved. He couldn't have known one moment's peace since her mother's arrest more than a week ago. "Remember, I'm standing the vigil tonight," Sienna said to her father, putting her hand on his arm. "Go to bed."
"I can do it," Thane said. "Someone has to stay awake until dawn, that's right, isn't it? If so, it ought to be me."
Papa, apparently assuming the matter was settled, kissed Sienna on the cheek and went to his room without another word. She hoped he would lie down and fall asleep immediately, both because he obviously needed the rest and because she didn't want him to overhear anything she and Thane were about to say. They remained silent until her father's door had closed. Sienna's knees felt watery as she took her place on the cushion next to Thane's. Being that close to him reminded her so powerfully of the one night they had spent together. He'd lost the last of his boyhood softness, and instead had become almost aggressively masculine. Broad shoulders, solid muscles, and a thick shadow of reddish stubble along the strong line of his jaw. But she turned until she could not see his face and said only, "You know it's dangerous for you here."
"I've been careful," he said. "I didn't leave my transport until after dark. Rented a ridge crawler under a fake name, came straight here. I'll leave at night, too. So I'm not going to see anyone who doesn't come into this house. I'm safe, unless you turn me in. By now you know I'm not going to."
"Because I'm owed the protection of the house?" Thane asked, the obvious subtext. "Or do you have another reason?" She gave him no direct answer. Wrapping her arms around herself in a hug, she said, "I'll keep the vigil tonight." "You're exhausted. It's obvious," he said, so harshly it seemed like a judgment. "I slept on the transport, so I've got a few hours in me."
"I can't let you do that."
"It's not a ritual thing, is it? If it were, your father would have said so. So why?" She was tired enough to tell him the truth.
"Because I don't want to owe you anything."
He laughed, not in humor, but surprise. Thane hadn't expected her to be this angry. Obviously, he'd had no idea she knew the truth about his involvement with the Rebel Alliance, though he probably suspected it by now. But he seemed to be nearly as angry with her, despite the fact that the last time they'd seen each other, they'd had to tear themselves apart.
"Look at it this way."
Thane spoke very quietly, and almost against her will, Sienna looked up at him again. "I already owe you one, for faking my suicide instead of turning me in. So if I keep the vigil tonight, we'll be even. Nobody will owe anyone anything, okay?" In her childhood, Sienna had read horrible stories of the cruel, barbarous punishments used in the old times, back before her people had ever left their original planet, or knew that others lived among the stars. She'd had nightmares about one in particular, where a person's four limbs would be tied to four separate beasts, which would then be driven in opposite directions until the victim's body was torn apart. That torture had haunted her, and she had given thanks that it could never happen to her. Now it was happening. Not to her body, but to her soul. She had sworn an oath of loyalty to the Empire, had made friends there who would be with her for a lifetime, and had served with distinction. Yet the shadows she had glimpsed long ago had lengthened and darkened, the useless deaths of so many pilots, the increasing pressure to put aside everything she had been, the corruption and devastation here on Jellucan.
And above all, she could not forget Alderaan, a world destroyed in an effort to prevent a war, an effort that had utterly failed. None of that divided her heart as brutally as simply being with Thane again. Not only had he abandoned his duty and her, but he had also joined the rebellion. The people responsible for Jude's death and this wretched war. It was the most complete betrayal she could imagine. But when everyone else had failed her, Thane had risked his life to stand by her side. Cyan rose from the table. "Good night, Thane." She didn't thank him for keeping the vigil. She simply walked to her bedroom and closed the door behind her without looking back. In her exhaustion, she thought she would fall asleep instantly, but instead she lay awake for nearly an hour, listening for the faint sounds Thane made as he moved about the house. Cyan knew he would not come to her, nor did she want him to, but she couldn't stop wanting to hear him, to know where he was, and be sure he was near. The next morning, when Perrin Rhee rose, Thane excused himself for a quick nap. By that time, he was tired enough to sleep, despite the questions burning in his mind, the same ones that had plagued him all night long. Such as, why is Cyana furious with me? He suspected she had learned he had joined the rebellion, which was bad news. Did that mean the Empire had a dossier on him? They couldn't, unless the Rebel Alliance had intelligence leaks of its own. Maybe Cyana had been punished for covering up his desertion. That too would explain why she seemed to find it difficult to look at him. Another, will I be able to rejoin my squadron when I return? Thane had reported his upcoming absence to General Ryken, but had given no details and been given none in return. Probably his relays for the Liberty's current coordinates would still be good when he left, but if the Rebellion got even a hint that the Empire might be coming after the ship, they would move on. Then Thane would have to go through the laborious process of reconnecting with the Rebel Alliance from scratch, sounding out pilots in various spaceports, traveling to worlds known to be sympathetic in hopes of hearing the right whispers and so on. It could be a lengthy process and would certainly be a dangerous one. But the question truly tearing Thane apart was, what am I doing here? Thane had told himself Kendi was right. The Empire wanted not only its officers' service, but also their souls. Years of thought control and moral compromise would have worn away anything he'd loved about Cyana, leaving only one of Palpatine's creations behind. Then he'd seen the news report about Cyana's mother. Instantly, he'd known Cyana would return to Jellocan, and just that quickly, he'd known he had to come back too and face her one more time. If the Empire had hollowed her out, left nothing behind but a cold, empty shell, then Thane could finally let go. If she'd still been the exact same girl he remembered, then Thane would have turned into the most zealous recruiter the Rebellion ever had. Neither of those extremes had come to pass. He knew that much. But he could look no further into Cyana's heart. She had become a mystery to him, one he didn't know how to solve. He rose from his nap in what he thought must be mid-morning. It was hard to tell now that the pollution in the air had become so thick. When he walked into the main room, Cyana lifted her head to look at him. She sat on one of the floor cushions, in leggings and a white tunic. She hadn't braided her hair, so the curls fluffed around her face like a cloud. That was how she'd worn her hair the night they danced together at the Imperial Palace. He'd been so sure that years of Imperial service would have hardened her. Had tried to envision her only as a stiff, sharp-edged Imperial officer. Instead, Cyana remained graceful, gentle, even delicate, though Thane knew that was appearance rather than reality. He remembered the firmness of muscle along her limbs and her back, just as he remembered what it had felt like to gaze into her dark brown eyes as she lay beneath him. "Snap out of it," he told himself. No good morning seemed to be forthcoming, so Thane didn't offer one either. "Where's your father?" "At work," she said, motioning to some bread and cheese that must have been meant for his breakfast. "Papa's an administrator at the garrison. He doesn't get time off because his wife is in danger and his heart is broken. He can't even be late." Was that anger with the Empire he heard?
Thane wanted to feel hopeful, but Sienna remained as still and unreadable as she'd been the night before. He helped himself to some bread and managed to sit at the damnably short table. "What does the ritual require of us today?"
"Nothing much.
Someone should be here constantly watching the house, but since only one person stands with us, that rule doesn't matter." Sienna hesitated, then added, "I requested a meeting with the local magistrate yesterday. Then again this morning. There's been no reply. I don't expect one."
"You're telling me we could leave, but we have no place to go."
No response. Her gaze was fixed on the one round window in front, where his makeshift red flag flapped in the wind. The soot in the air would stain it dark soon. He'd followed Jellucan's degeneration over the years, but that didn't make it easier to witness firsthand. If only they could travel back in time to when they were kids, when their world still felt like home and they understood each other without words. Then he knew exactly what he wanted to do, exactly how he would know if she was still his, Sienna. He said, "Fly with me." She turned to look at him.
"You want to fly? Now? Today?"
"We can take the ridge crawlers to my family's hangar. I bet the old V-171's still in there."
"If your parents saw you..."
"I checked before I left the spaceport. They're halfway across the planet on business. We're clear." Sienna looked doubtful.
"The V-171 might not be skyworthy any longer. It's been a few years."
"So we check her out. If she's broken down, okay, we're done. But maybe she isn't."
Thane watched her struggle to find a reason to say no. Finally, she sighed.
"Okay."
He grabbed his dark blue jacket and cap with more dread than optimism. Sienna remained closed off to him, and Thane wasn't sure things weren't better that way. Yet they had rarely been closer than when they were in the air together. That was where they had taught each other, learned about each other, and explored their world as one. So that was where he'd finally see whether they could still communicate at all. The ride to the hangar provided more suspense than Thane had expected. While the trails to that area had been obscure years ago, they'd come into common use. Each time they'd pass another ridge crawler, his gut tightened. He half expected each driver to be a stormtrooper who would draw a blaster at any moment. But nobody gave them a second glance. He and Sienna were just two more figures climbing the mountain, shrouded in morning fog and gritty mining ash. Her ridge crawler traveled in front of his. He felt like her shadow. Whatever Dalvin was up to these days, he wasn't visiting home, or at least hadn't been by the hangar in years. The doors had almost rusted shut, and when Thane and Sienna tugged them open, clouds of dust swirled out and made them cough. Unsurprisingly, the V-171 was dusty, but when he hit the control panels, they lit up, glowing green. He patted the side of the ship, absurdly proud.
"All systems say go."
"Then we go."
Sienna held out her hand for Lizard Toad Snake before she consciously recognized what she was doing, to judge by her sudden embarrassment. Thane simply held out his hand as well. 1, 2, 3. He went for Toad, but she chose Snake, and Snake ate Toad.
"You always were luckier with this than I was," he muttered.
That won him a smile, fleeting but real.
"Too bad, Kyrell."
She sounded like herself again.
"You're co-pilot today."
The familiar rhythms of preparation and takeoff came as a relief. They knew how to talk to each other again and what to do. Within moments, the V-171 had hovered off the ground. As Sienna eased them out of the hangar, he said,
"Come on, let's grab some sky."
"You got it." And they soared up toward the sun. They fell into sync immediately, perfectly. They knew which way she'd want to turn before she did it. Sienna responded to every move he made almost before he was finished. It shocked him how much they hadn't changed in this one way, even as the rest of their lives had been turned upside down. They still knew how to fly as one. Several thousand meters up, the pollution thinned until they were surrounded by the same brightness he remembered from when they were children. The clouds shone white. The rugged peaks of the highest mountains rose through them, looking like islands in snow. Those altitudes couldn't be mined. They remained pristine, untouched. From here, they could almost believe Jellucan was still beautiful. Sienna wanted to linger in the sky as much as he did. Thane knew that without having to be told. Together, they drew loops in the air, circled the familiar mountain ranges, caught the upwinds that still blew from Waver's Peak. When she tilted the wings to catch that drift, Thane had already begun to lean with her, and he laughed.
You love this! So do you!
He could hear the smile in her voice. This isn't a truce. You're still with the Rebellion. She's still a loyal Imperial officer. We can never share anything more than a stolen hour, one flight. So Thane told himself. Yet he couldn't make himself believe it. Even when a storm began to blow in, they postponed coming down as long as they could. Once the winds picked up enough chop, though, they wordlessly agreed on the moment when the V-171 had to descend. In the tiny craft, they could even feel the way each other's weight shifted as they responded to the shear. He still knew how she moved.
Come on!
They were 10, and Sienna wanted to weave through the stalactites for the first time.
We can do it!
He sent them spiraling down toward their goal, the sudden dizziness sweeping over them both at the same moment and making them laugh. Their speeder bikes were locked together as they soared through Coruscant, each of them leaning toward the other as they aimed for the exact center of the final Rykan hoop and victory.
Like this?
He could feel the warmth of Sienna's whisper against his bare shoulder. Too overcome to speak, Thane had only been able to nod. They took the V-171 in before the rains began. Sienna powered down in silence. Whatever rapport they'd regained in the air had disappeared. As they disembarked and left the hangar, they might have been any two co-workers in a commercial spaceport. But Sienna didn't return to her ridgecrawler. Instead, she walked to the far edge of the hangar's terrace toward the narrow, rocky path that led away from the main road toward the fortress. She paused for a moment to look over her shoulder, clearly daring Thane to follow.
He never could resist a dare.
Neither of them spoke until they had climbed inside the fortress itself. When Sienna turned on one of the old lights they'd left up there, Thane looked around, blinking in surprise. He'd expected a dusty ruin. Instead, the surfaces were clean, the blankets beaten. A few of their toy spaceships still dangled from the wire-mobile they'd built when they were 9. He said,
"This place held up well."
"I came here yesterday," she said. "My ship landed before my father could leave work, and Valentia, I couldn't bear to stay there long. This was the only place I wanted to be. It needed some cleaning, but less than you'd think."
Sienna turned to face him then, and in the approaching dark of the storm, he could not read her expression.
"So much has stayed the same." Thane took a step toward her.
"Sienna, you joined the Rebellion!"
The words burst out of her like water after a dam broke.
"How could you do that? They're terrorists! They killed Jude!"
"We are not terrorists! If anyone's a terrorist, it's Palpatine himself, because he rules by fear.
You said you weren't going to the rebels. You told me that to my face.
That was before I realized just how bad the Empire really is. The rebels might not be perfect, but somebody's got to do something.
So you decided you hate the Empire. You're willing to kill the people you went to school with, your fellow officers, your friends."
Sienna took a step closer to him, her hands in fists at her sides.
"You're even willing to kill me. Don't you think that nearly destroys me every single time I go into battle? Don't you know I'd rather die first? But I can't stand aside and do nothing, Sienna. I can't."
She shook her head.
"You had to stop being a cynic now?"
Thane wanted to shake her. He wanted to plead with her to listen. More than anything, he wanted to be back in the air, where they still understood each other. But the storm was on them now.
"That's all you have to say? You dragged me up here just to yell at me?"
"No."
"Then what?"
Sienna pulled his face down to hers and kissed him, hard. The next few moments were a feverish blur. Her small hands reaching beneath his jacket to splay across his chest, the feel of her in his arms, the taste of her lips. He couldn't be close enough to her. Even now, entwined together, they were too far apart.
Thane embraced her tightly enough to lift her feet from the ground, then backed her against the wall, pinning her there with the weight of his body. He covered her open mouth with his. When they parted long enough to gasp for breath, Sienna whispered, "Don't you dare stop." He didn't.
Chapter 21. Hours later, Sienna sat at the mouth of the fortress cave, wrapped in a blanket as she watched the last of the storm. The winds had died down a while ago, but the rain still fell across the lower ranges in silvery sheets. How had she forgotten the view could be so beautiful? This had always been the place where she went to dream. Imperial service allowed so little time for that, no hours in which to let your mind wander, to imagine anything you liked. Sienna rose and walked back inside the fortress on legs that still felt pleasantly wobbly. The furs and blankets were piled in the back, near the old heater they'd dragged up there 10 years before, and only the faintest light shone back that far. She paused for a moment, to take in the sight of Thane sprawled face down, more asleep than awake, almost completely uncovered. She leaned one shoulder against the wall as she whispered, "Look through my eyes." That made him stir. Thane rolled over and smiled drowsily.
You're showing your sister this.
I'm supposed to show her the most beautiful and extraordinary moments of my life.
This qualifies.
He held one arm out to her, and she curled by his side, draping her blanket over them both. Despite the small heater, the air inside the fortress remained cool, but Thane kept her warm. Sienna wished they never had to acknowledge the world beyond the fortress, that it could always be the two of them together, inseparable. "You probably know this," she said, "but I still love you."
"And I love you. Everything else might change, but not that."
Sienna rolled over to look at him. It was so hard to say this without anger, but she had to speak. "If you could join the rebellion, you've changed more than I would have thought possible. Do you still buy the Imperial dogma that they're terrorists? They're idealists, really. They believe the New Republic will be all the grand and glorious things the Old Republic never was. I'm not that kind of fool. Never will be. But the Empire must fall." "You took an oath."
"Enough with the oath, Sienna."
Thane paused until he had a handle on his temper again. "I'm sorry. I know what your honor means to you. But this isn't about whether or not we've kept faith in the Empire. It's about whether the Empire has kept faith with us." Too many of her own doubts responded to those words. In Sienna's mind, she saw the officers dying in vain, heard Penry's last scream, watched Alderaan explode again. And now, even her mother had to suffer. She buried her face against Thane's chest. It felt safer to speak within the warmth of his arms. "I see the darkness within the Empire. How could I not?" He wound one of her curls around his finger, his playful touches contrasting with the gravity of what he said. "If you see that, then I don't understand how you keep serving the Empire just because of a promise you made years ago, when you didn't know the whole truth."
"Nobody ever knows the whole truth. That's why promises mean something. Otherwise, they'd be too easy, don't you see? We look toward the unknown future, and promise to be faithful no matter what comes."
Sienna sighed. "My oath matters to me, but that's not the only reason I stay."
"Then why?"
"Because the Empire is more than corruption and brutality." It cost her to say those words, but Thane forced her to be honest with herself. "It's also the structure that keeps the galaxy from collapsing into chaos again, like it did during the Clone Wars. And for every petty bureaucrat making himself rich by skimming profits, there's also someone like Nash Windrider, who's genuinely trying to do the right thing. If the good people leave, doesn't that make everything worse? Don't we have a responsibility to stand our ground and change the Empire, if we can?"
"Still an optimist."
Thane hesitated before he asked, "How is Nash?"
"He's doing better now.
The first year after Alderaan was hard, but he came through.
I think he's still lonely sometimes. Sienna remembered the night Nash had propositioned her in front of the door to her bunk, but she had said no, and it was nothing Thane needed to hear. He talks about you from time to time. I hate that he has to keep thinking you're dead.
Me too.
They lay together in silence for a while after that, her head pillowed against Thane's chest. Sienna thought back to those first few months at the Academy, when they'd all been so trusting, so sure of their place in the galaxy. Could that have been only 6 years ago? It felt like another lifetime.
Sienna, Thane sounded wary, I want to ask you a question that you might not like. Hear me out, okay?
She figured that if she hadn't killed Thane for joining the rebellion, he was safe no matter what.
Ask. What's happening to your mother? Have you asked yourself whether this is all a test? Another of the mind games the Empire plays on its troops?
If only she could still believe those tests were meant to strengthen them, that they served a greater purpose.
Had she really once been angry with Thane for suggesting otherwise?
The memory of her naivete embarrassed her. In the years since, Sienna had learned that the Empire administered extreme tests of loyalty sometimes. Maybe for personnel being considered for sensitive positions, those tests could be justified. But to toy with the friendship between two young cadets, only to divorce them from any ties to their homeworld? That had been almost childish in its cruelty. Maybe the Empire was testing her by putting her mother on trial, but Sienna doubted it. What was happening to Mama was more likely simple, stupid, provincial corruption. Everyone involved knew it, and no one would say so because they were all too afraid of what the Imperial officials would do to them. From the Emperor down to the lowliest administrator, so much had been transformed. Where could they even begin?
I don't think what's happening to Mama is part of any larger plot, she said, and left it at that.
Do you trust your superiors in the Rebel Alliance? She expected Thane to say no immediately. He put his trust in so few people, and surely the dregs that ran the rebellion wouldn't qualify for the honor. Sienna was shocked when he said,
Some of them. Most of them, actually.
You know, I didn't even have to ask permission to come here. They trusted that I'd leave for a good reason, and believed I'd return. Sure, they dreamed some crazy dreams about this perfect galaxy they think they can build, but at least they respect the people who serve.
Sienna could hardly believe what she'd heard. Thane Kyrell had finally found authority figures he didn't hate, and they were rebels?
Surely he was talking like this in an effort to convince her to leave the Empire. She thought he might have said even wilder things if they would keep her with him.
How long have you been with them?
I joined up several months ago.
His thumb brushed along her cheekbone, the tiniest possible caress.
At first I did supply runs, but as the war intensified, I'm in combat more often now.
I recognized you at Hoth, you know.
You were there? Thane's face paled almost to white. I told myself, the fleet is so huge, I thought the chances that I'd fight against you were... I didn't think it would happen.
I was never in danger, she said, sitting up and tucking the blanket around herself.
Seeing his fear at the thought of hurting her, she couldn't bear it.
It was that move of yours, when you spun through the AT-AT's legs. I knew that instant it could only be you.
The one person in the entire fleet who could have identified me by how I flew.
Maybe the Force is guiding this, bringing us together even though we ought to be apart.
That made him grimace. Thane hadn't changed enough to become religious, it seemed. I seem to remember using my own fake identification to cross the galaxy and reach you. No Force involved. She held up one hand.
All right, all right.
Thane sat up beside her and slid his arms around her waist. The sky outside the fortress had nearly turned dark.
Listen, he said. I know you're not ready to come with me today, and maybe you won't consider joining the rebellion.
Never.
But I thought if you might leave the Empire someday, even if it's just to come back here or start your life over on another world.
Was he promising to leave the rebels and join her, if only she would desert?
Sienna didn't want to know.
I'm not going to leave, at least not before my tour of duty ends. If there's any chance that the good in the Empire can outweigh the bad, then it's our duty to preserve it.
The Empire's rotten to the core. It's our duty to destroy it.
They were still at odds, and always would be, it seemed. Sienna knew that. Yet the hard facts seemed so distant as he embraced her again, and she leaned her head against him. She and Thane had never been more in love, or further apart. The next morning, the trial of Sienna's mother began. Trial. That word sounded far too official and grand for the hasty, sordid proceedings. Sienna sat in the semicircular stands around the judicial chamber, wearing her uniform with its red and blue rank squares, proclaiming her an imperial lieutenant commander. Next to her, Papa kept his head bent as if he could not bear to see Mama standing in the dock with her wrists cuffed. The prosecutor, a man with small hands and oiled hair, officiously read the evidence line by line, entering it all into the record. He had not one bit of proof that couldn't have been doctored by a halfway competent data engineer, a point that would no doubt have been made by the defense if her mother had been allowed a defense. But now that was allowed only in civil cases, never in trials for crimes against the Empire. Sienna could hear Thane's voice in her head, asking if the Empire had kept faith with her. She did not dare answer him, even in her own thoughts. He had left late the night before to catch a red-eye shuttle, to where, she would never know. Thane had bid her father a formal, correct farewell. Papa had been wise enough to let Sienna walk Thane out to the ridge crawler on her own. They had kissed each other so long and so fiercely that her lips remained swollen, the discomfort welcome because it was proof he'd really been with her. "Whatever else becomes of us," she had said, "thank you for standing with my family. You took a tremendous risk to be here when I needed you the most. It was an act of the truest loyalty and friendship." His smile had been so sad. "Actually, I came here thinking I'd finally get over you. Should have known better." Sienna tried to catch her mother's eye, hoping to give some comfort just by being there. Yet Mama wouldn't even look at her directly. It was as if she were ashamed, even though by now everyone in this sham of a trial had to know the charges were false. Then the realization pierced her through. Her mother wouldn't look at her because she didn't want to endanger Sienna any further by making her show sympathy to someone accused by the Empire. Imperial rule wasn't as cruel to every world as it had been to Jellucan. Sienna's travels had told her that much. But it didn't matter, because the cruelty was there, now, destroying her family and her home. "You realize we can't ever meet again," Sienna had said as Thane held her close. He'd already started his ridge crawler, the motor's hum almost lost in the fierce winds. "We said that last time." "It's different now. You shouldn't have come back this time, and I don't know if I'll ever return again."
"We keep telling each other goodbye," Thane had whispered into her ear. "When am I finally going to believe it?" She didn't answer because she couldn't. Even if she and Thane never saw each other again, she knew in some ways their bond would endure. He was too much a part of her to be completely lost, not as long as she lived. It was some consolation, but not much. The magistrate didn't even look up from his screens as he pronounced judgment.
"Guilty of embezzlement and fraud against representatives of the Emperor. Sentenced to 6 years' labor in the mines."
Sienna felt the verdict, like poison injected into her veins, agonizing down to the bone. Hard labor? Jellucan had banned that as a punishment nearly a century ago, and even then had limited it to those accused of violent crimes. Her mother was a middle-aged woman, never particularly tall or strong. How was she supposed to endure long days of hauling heavy ore? With modern mine droids, there was no need for anyone to do that kind of backbreaking work. The sentence was both primitive and punitive, and had been levied against a woman the judge had to know was innocent. Vereen Reed didn't even glance at her husband and daughter as she was led away. Sienna realized they wouldn't be given a chance to say goodbye.
"This is impossible," she whispered as everyone else filed out of the courtroom, leaving only Sienna and her father behind.
A mockery of justice.
Say nothing more.
Of course.
There were probably recording devices somewhere in the room. We can't have more trouble.
No, Sienna. You should not speak against your government. Ever, under any circumstances.
Papa, how can you say that today?
Perron Rhee folded his hands together as solemnly as a village elder.
Because we gave our loyalty to the Empire on the day Jellocan was annexed. Because we do not betray our word, even when we are betrayed in return. Otherwise, we are no better than they are.
His eyes blazed, but his voice remained low and calm.
This life has never been one made for fairness or justice. We endure, and we prevail not as crude matter, but in the realm of the spirit.
She had grown up believing that so devoutly, and now the words sounded hollow. Sienna could not take comfort in anger or in faith. All she could do was put her arms around her father and hope his beliefs sustained him more than they did her.
And was justice done on Jellocan, Lieutenant Commander Rhee?
Sir, yes, sir.
Sienna stood at attention in ISB Officer Ronadam's office, staring past him at the small circle of Starfield revealed through his one window. Her hands were clasped tightly behind her back, palms sweaty. Captain Ronadam studied her for what seemed to be too long a time. His thin mustache twitched once, but she could not tell whether he felt amusement or irritation.
Your mother was guilty, then?
The evidence presented was very clear, sir.
You surprised me, Rhee.
His tone made it impossible to know whether that was a good thing, and his eyes were narrow. He held her in contempt for doing the very thing he had forced her to do. Did he recognize his own hypocrisy? Probably not.
Very well. You have used 2 weeks' leave, but otherwise your record remains unblemished. I believe we can expect a promotion in your near future.
Ronadam honestly thought she would betray her own mother just for the sake of advancement. Sienna dug her fingernails into her palms, using the pain to steady herself.
Thank you, sir.
Do your duty. Keep the course. There is good here in so many of the people who serve. I owe it to them to fulfill my oath and learn how I can help save the Empire from its own corruption. They were noble sentiments, and she meant them. Yet in her mind, she imagined saying all this to Thane, and he only shook his head. Chapter 22. Thane made it back to the Liberty just in time. Corona Squadron was already preparing to move, not in the frenzy that followed any threat of imminent attack, but quickly enough that he would have missed them if he'd returned a few hours later.
"Mr. Kyrell, how kind of you to join us," said the Contessa as she walked through the hangar, where pilots busily loaded astromech droids and checked ration packs.
He nodded at her, but didn't slow his steps until he walked straight to General Ryken.
"Kyrell!"
Ryken hardly looked away from his tablet. He stood in the center of the activity. A firework spray of blue-white sparks rose from a nearby welding torch. The air smelled of rubber and fuel.
"Excellent. You've got 2 hours until takeoff."
Thane stood at attention, with his chin slightly lifted, the way he'd learned at the academy. The old training had kicked in the first moment he'd acknowledged that he might have screwed up.
"Sir, I need to report my movements during my absence."
"This is a volunteer army, remember? You're free to come and go as you please, as long as you observe all security protocols."
"I returned to my homeworld of Jellocan to assist a friend in trouble," Thane said.
Ryken didn't glance up until Thane added,
"My friend is an officer in the Imperial Starfleet."
That did it. Ryken stared, and all around him, the buzz of work began falling silent. Thane could almost feel the eyes on him, as hot as searchlights. General Ryken's decibel level rose markedly.
"You made contact with an enemy officer."
"Yes, sir."
Thane offered nothing more. He knew he had to report it, but he'd be damned if he'd apologize for seeing Sienna. That's highly irregular, Kyrell, Riken said. But you concealed your activities with the Rebel Alliance from this officer?
Lieutenant Commander Rhee was already aware I had joined the Rebellion, sir.
Murmurs rose around him. By then he'd drawn a crowd. From the corner of his eye, Thane could see shocked expressions on the faces of Yendor, Smikes, and Kendi. However, he never turned away from Riken.
How the hell did she know that?
Riken's alarm was very real.
Do we have a double agent feeding them intel?
No, sir. Not regarding this. She had identified me based on Imperial battle footage.
Nobody would believe it if he confessed that Syana had known him only by the way he flew. They were the only two people who could ever understand that. Riken accepted this explanation, which was a relief, but Thane wasn't out of trouble yet.
Are you absolutely sure this officer lacked any opportunity to place a tracking device on your vehicle or your person?
It didn't happen, sir.
He wasn't going to get into the many things Syana had an opportunity to do to his person.
I guarantee that. At no point did I share any information about Rebellion members, bases, or activities.
Nor did she ask. This was a personal matter.
Personal?
Riken shook his head.
We'll scan you and your ship. If those scans check out, we'll let this drop.
Thank you, sir.
And we can take it as a given that you're not going to make contact with any Imperial officer again?
Thane remembered their final moments together in front of her house. The way her fingers had tightened around the collar of his jacket, as if she could hold him there by will alone.
Yes, sir.
Very well. Just for the record, Kyrell, the galaxy is full of women who don't fight for the enemy.
With that, Riken walked off. A couple of the droids zoomed in on Thane's X-Wing to search it. That left him to finally face the rest of Corona Squadron. The other pilots had already gathered around, their expressions displaying everything from disbelief to outrage. Smike spoke first.
You abandon your post to bang your ex? The lieutenant commander in the Imperial Starfleet ex?
Thane refused to be cowed.
They're about to promote her to commander.
People groaned. Obviously, he was going to be the least popular member of Corona Squadron for some time to come. A loose cannon. Someone who would take risks for no reason. Fine by him. As long as they didn't doubt his allegiance, Thane didn't give a damn what they thought of his choices.
We all have to put our pasts behind us. All of us. That includes even the people on our side, much less Imperial loyalists.
The Contessa had never showed anger before, but she did now.
That doesn't mean we're never supposed to acknowledge the people we love ever again, he retorted.
Oh, great, Smikes moaned. He's talking about love. This is going nowhere fast.
Yendor, more calmly than the others, leaned against the strut of the nearest starfighter and said,
You realize this Imperial woman of yours would kill us all, right?
That did it. Thane got in Yendor's face.
You don't know Syana. I do. I made a choice based on that knowledge. None of you were endangered or even affected, so it's none of your damned business.
In the silence that followed, he backed away from Yendor, whose hands were raised in a gesture that meant on every planet,
Hey man, simmer down.
Thane figured the only productive thing he could do right then was report to 2-1-B for the scans. But as he turned to go, Kendi spoke, almost under her breath.
You're going to tear yourself apart.
She wasn't wrong. Thane said only,
She's still Syana,
and walked off.
Kendi would understand that, probably. Nobody else would. He didn't care. It was his own business if he crossed the galaxy, or broke his heart, or steered his X-Wing straight into the core of a star.
The Rebel Fleet's new base was on an uninhabited planet so small and obscure it had no name, only the numeral designation 525-1977. This world's rotation moved slowly, meaning days and nights each lasted the equivalent of several weeks on most planets. For now, the Rebellion hid in the enduring darkness. Thane's first thought as he took his X-Wing into land was that they'd built a much larger hangar than usual this time. The scale of the structure reminded him more of Imperial facilities than the hasty makeshift setups the Rebel Alliance had to rely on. When he came in through the shield doors, however, he realized why the building was so enormous. It had to be. In the previous 2 months, the size of the Rebel Armada seemed to have doubled.
What happened?
Thane asked, flight helmet under one arm, as Corona Squadron went to report in. He wondered if the Empire had destroyed another world or committed another atrocity so horrific that a huge swath of the galaxy had finally had enough. Most of the others ignored him, but Yendor replied,
Usually they don't bring the whole fleet together like this. A couple divisions stay separate just in case, you know? Not anymore. Rumor has it something big is planned.
We have new recruits as well,
the Contessa said, pointing to several non-regulation ships that stood around them. While these kinds of ships had always been a part of the fleet, there were definitely more than usual, and more people milling around who had no uniforms, only rebellion patches hastily applied to their coveralls. Even as the war grew more pitched and more deadly, recruits continued to flock to the rebel cause. If that kept up, Thane thought, they actually might have a shot. He could see several individual starfighters, a few Dornian gunships, and one freighter that seemed to have been put together out of the parts of at least a dozen other ships. A broad smile spread across Thane's face as he yelled,
"The mighty Oak Apocalypse!"
The rest of Corona Squadron turned to him with expressions suggesting that he had well and truly lost his mind. He didn't care, because now people were spilling out of the ship to run toward him, Brill grinning through her pink fur, JJH2 rolling toward him and whistling, Methwat wearing his version of a smile, and behind the rest, roaring her welcome, Logara.
About time you guys showed up, Thane said, laughing as he submitted to a woolly Wookie hug.
Logara growled plaintively, and Thane somehow resisted rolling his eyes.
I am not too thin. We refitted the whole ship, Brill said with pride. New shields, new dampeners. She's toting guns from more kinds of fighters than you can count on both hands. Or claws, tentacles, whatever you have.
Ready for action, huh?
Now that he had had a moment to think about it, he wasn't surprised Logara and the Moa had joined the rebellion at last. Still, there was something great about knowing that so many of the people he cared about now stood by his side. It took him back to the moment he'd chosen to join the rebellion in the first place, and reminded him why, when he needed that memory the most. Aboard the Superstar Destroyer Executor, all officers and stormtroopers were expected to keep their combat skills honed. But the number of certifications required lessened at higher ranks. Now that Sienna had made commander, she no longer had to spend at least 1 hour a week practicing hand-to-hand combat. However, that just meant she spent more time on the few skills still remaining.
I could live without using this thing ever again, Sienna grumbled as she shouldered the practice flamethrower. If we ever need this on the bridge, I'm guessing we're already done for. Sienna Ree complaining about regulations?
Baris shook her head in amazement.
Hey, if you don't want to do this, you've got days left to fulfill your regs. We should take advantage of being out in the middle of nowhere.
Technically, the ship was still in hyperspace on its way to the middle of nowhere, but Briss's point stood. Since they were being called on to do nothing but go to an uninhabited system and sit and wait, all junior officers had more free time than usual.
We could see if Nash and some of the other guys are free, head to one of the cantinas, let our hair down, and...
I'm staying here. If you want to go party, nobody's stopping you.
Okay, okay. You've been in a mood for almost 3 weeks straight. Isn't it time you snapped out of it?
Baris didn't know the reasons for Sienna's temper, and no doubt had not guessed it was the shield behind which Sienna was hiding her wretchedness. Once, Sienna had felt free to confide nearly everything in Baris, and she longed to hear her advice now. Baris was so practical, so matter-of-fact, that she'd listened to the whole story without blinking and probably come up with the perfect words to help Sienna cope. But that was the rub. Probably. Baris could be irreverent and wasn't above bending a regulation for practicality's sake, but Sienna had never doubted her friend's fundamental loyalty to the Empire. If Sienna spoke about the injustice of the verdict against her mother, Baris might sympathize. On the other hand, she might well report the conversation to Ronadan. Of course, Sienna couldn't admit the truth about Thane to anyone. That heartbreak was one she had to carry alone. Still, carrying that weight would have felt less terrible if she could have shared the rest with someone. Instead, she was forced to admit that she had not one friend in the entire world she could entirely trust.
Let's just torch some junk, okay?
Sayana pulled on the flame trooper mask and readied the controls. Baris, obviously knowing better than to interrupt, began the holographic part of the simulator. Attackers made of shadowy green light began running toward them, and Sayana pulled the trigger. Explosive fire shot out, incinerating her enemies. Again, then again. She had never relished combat duty. Flying was her joy and her passion. But today, Sayana poured all her bottled-up sorrow and fury into every blast. When the first simulation ended, she immediately signaled for Baris to start another, then another. The featureless green hologram simply vanished when they took a fatal hit. Sayana found herself wishing the programming were more honest and graphic. She wanted to see her kills for once.
I am really glad we don't room together anymore, Baris muttered when the final holo faded. Because I do not want to be the next person you're mad at. You're right, you don't.
Sayana slid up her face mask and wiped her wrist across her forehead. Even though she'd remained in firing position the entire time, and the flamethrower wasn't unbearably heavy, exhaustion already racked her body. Sleep had been elusive since her return to the Executor. Despite her weariness, she might have gone for another round had she not felt the subtle shift in the vibration beneath their feet.
We've left hyperspace, she said to Baris. Never ceases to amaze me how you can feel that,
Baris sighed.
So much for free time, huh?
Even sitting out in the middle of nowhere, namely the Hudala system, notable only for its largest, massively ringed planet, required everyone back at duty stations. Sayana was relieved. Nothing helped but keeping busy. As the two of them walked out of their simulation room, however, Sayana glanced through the triangular windows into space beyond. What she saw stopped her where she stood. Instead of the planet Hudala, or the void of space, the view showed countless Imperial ships. Star destroyers, attack cruisers, light cruisers, almost as many TIE fighters as stars.
What the hell? Baris said. Did we get called back to Coruscant instead?
Sayana shook her head. Only captains, admirals, and Lord Vader himself knew plans very far in advance, so she couldn't say exactly why the Hudala system had suddenly become a meeting spot for nearly the entire Imperial Starfleet. But she only had to look at the assembled ships to know. Whatever was happening was important and would affect them all. Corona Squadron had received their next intelligence mission only 10 hours after reaching 525-1977. For the first time, they had received their orders not from Riken, but from Admiral Akbar of the Mon Calamari.
Remote sensors detected an unusual level of Imperial activity in the Hudala system, he had said, pacing in front of them.
Akbar was an imposing man, taller than any human, with protruding wizened eyes, so the entire squadron remained far more rigid and silent than usual.
Nothing in that area should be of interest to the Empire or to anyone else. Why then is the Empire establishing a presence there? Corona Squadron, you will go to Hudala. Observe the Imperial ships and obtain as much data as possible.
They were supposed to stroll in to an isolated system and take readings on the Imperial Starfleet, then get out alive? Thane wasn't sure whether Akbar was a deluded optimist or someone who didn't mind putting lives at risk for uncertain gain. Then Akbar had dismissed them by saying,
May the Force be with you!
So deluded. As Thane checked the sensors on his X-Wing's panel, he gave thanks for Hudala's enormous ring. The gas giant swirled in shades of red and violet, but the most notable aspect of this world was its planetary rings, which were some of the largest in the galaxy. Those rings comprised several million pieces of debris, most of them smaller than the average asteroid, and yet just large enough to hide a ship behind. Like every other member of Corona Squadron, he'd tethered his ship to one of the larger rocks on Hudala's outer ring. Their X-Wings floated through the gradual rotation of the countless pieces of debris in the field, the soft violet glow of that system's distant star casting strange shadows. The slow orbit of the ring had allowed them to take their positions far enough away to avoid detection. Now they were within scanning distance and could take all the readings and holos they needed, and they didn't even have to worry about being scanned in return.
With their ships running on minimum power and well concealed by the ring's debris, there was almost no chance of their being spotted. Almost. Thane hated that word. He knew how thorough Imperial officers were trained to be. Still, the odds were on their side for a change. He'd take it.
"This is almost as large as the attack fleet they sent to Hoth,"
Yendor said, his voice crackling over the comms.
"Do you think they've got some bad intel telling them we put a base on one of Hudala's moons?"
Thane answered, "If so, you'd think they would have figured out the mistake by now. But they've been here for days, with more ships coming in all the time." What were they up to? Thane kept trying to come up with an answer and failing. If a new hyperlane had been discovered in this area of space, their sensors would have detected it by now. If the Empire were planning an attack, it wouldn't need this much time to assemble. No critical elements could be mined from any of the planets or moons in this system. The mystery seemed complete. He'd asked for the job of tallying single starfighters, an enormously detailed and irritating task, so the squadron had been happy enough to let Thane handle it. The work kept him too occupied to think much about the odds of Sienna being a part of a fleet that large, or to find out which specific Star Destroyers had gathered there. "It's like they brought all these ships together just to show off," Thane thought sourly as he continued his calculations, adding in new pieces of data as his sensors provided it. Why show off in the middle of nowhere, without anybody around to see you? What could call for a display this ostentatious? A concentration of the Imperial firepower in a place where it could do no good. Then his hands froze, allowing long scrolls of numbers to spill by. Thane cursed under his breath as he realized what this was. The Empire displayed its power often, with a degree of theatricality he'd found absurd, even when he'd been part of it. But it never did so without reason. Most often a show of strength was meant to intimidate the people who lived under Imperial control, but sometimes officers and ships made it a point of displaying their power to impress their superiors. The greater number of men or ships put at a commander's disposal, the more important that commander was. This fleet had been assembled to prove someone's importance. Only one person in the galaxy would merit this much attention, firepower, and awe. He whispered, "The Emperor." Chapter 23. Sienna had not regularly flown TIE fighters during the past couple of years, so when she received a summons to report to the main docking bay, she was both surprised and pleased. Maybe she needed to spend some time flying through the stars. Then she might feel like herself again. When she suited up in the black armor, Sienna walked into the bay with her helmet under one arm to see the other three pilots she'd be flying with. Two strangers and Nash Windrider. He grinned like a boy when he recognized her. "What a delight to be flying with you again, Commander Rhee. I hadn't thought you would still lower yourself to serving alongside the likes of us." "Hush." She risked a smile. Nash seemed to be teasing her as a friend, not as a would-be lover. The sooner they skated past that, the better. "You know, I've always wondered how you manage to pilot TIEs at all. How do you fit? I'll have you know that I am fully 1 centimeter below the maximum height for TIE pilots. TIEs are more cramped than a warship, I admit, but what isn't? You, on the other hand, are far more compact and should fold up nicely."
"I'm not that short."
No matter how many times Sienna protested about this, nobody ever seemed to believe her or their own eyes. Nash opened his mouth for his next jab, then straightened as Admiral Piet strode toward them. They all came to attention, helmets facing out. Piet didn't bother with preamble. "Scans have picked up some strange readings on the outer edge of Hudala's ring, including life forms. Possibly it's no more than metal ores and Minox. However, if we have some spies lurking out there, well, you know what to do."
"Aye, sir,"
they said in unison. Everyone saluted and turned on the beat, ready to board their ships. But Piet said,
"Rhee, I need to have a word with you."
She turned back, again at attention. Why would Piet need to speak with her specifically? Her imagination conjured visions of psychological interrogations.
They whispered that the questioners could sense the moment anyone began to turn traitor. Had they picked up on her doubt? Instead, Piet said,
"You have an additional assignment on this flight."
"Yes, sir?"
"Those aren't Minox in the planetary ring. They're almost..."